There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that.
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Friday. Big thank you to Judge Thapar, author of The People's Justice, book about Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas. And if you're into the originalism, the stories behind the originalism, what a cool book. Hopefully you can grab a copy, and hopefully we'll get the judge back on the show soon. And what started this, just for a second. You know, I kind of paused, and there was no setup here. I knew the judge would come on. I didn't know, you know, that he, in his book, talked about Kelo versus New London. But remember, I brought that up on Monday, I think, when we were talking about this story out about using eminent domain to take the homes of people in Alabama Village. Because the utility, the Pritchard Water and Sewer Board, can't provide the water there without it leaking and all those problems. So it was discussed that they might use eminent domain to take those homes so they don't have to service them with water. And that's what got me started talking about eminent domain and Kelo versus New London. It's funny how all that stuff comes together. All right. It's been too long. Y'all say hello to my buddy, John Sharp from AL.com. How are you doing, John?
I'm doing good, Sean. How are you?
I'm good. Before we get into the story, let's talk about these types of stories, okay? So, because we're going to talk about the Mobile Civic Center rehab. There are some stories that you do as a journalist. You do it, and you note the thing that happened, and then that story is gone. You know, I mean, it's there on the web, but that story is not, after a week, it's not news. It's a thing. It happened. It's past, right? Then there's...
Yeah, it's just kind of a... Yeah, go ahead.
And then there's these stories that seem to not end. And it could be I-10 Mobile River Bridge Project, could be Amtrak, it could be the Mobile Civic Center. So it was with great interest earlier this week when I saw your headline, more concerts, ice hockey, what awaits Mobile with $202 million at a Mobile Civic Center rehab. So what does await this time, John? What about this time?
First off, the big thing and what I will be writing about over the weekend is Mardi Gras. That awaits. And that's a kind of a little bit of a conundrum. And a lot of folks, I think it's on the radar. We probably won't have a parking lot at the Civic Center. So if you have a ball at the Mobile Civic Center next year, parking is still up in the air. We don't know where people will be parking. We don't know the logistics of what that looks like. Certainly folks are talking about it. The city's looking into that as well. But that's kind of where we're at. And Mardi Gras, while it might seem like a long ways away as we sit around in 100-degree weather, it's not. It's right around, we get to Halloween, and that's kind of like, here we go. So, that's kind of more the immediate thing, and that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's this coming Mardi Gras. For people to understand what you're saying, so while the venue will still be open to have Mardi Gras balls and receptions and all that, the parking lot, as of this Mardi Gras coming, 2024, is going to be out of play.
That's correct. Yeah, that's where we're at right now with it. And that pretty much has been confirmed by the city. And talking to the Carnival Association, they're all aware of that situation. So it's not like it's a surprise. It might be a surprise, probably, the folks that will show up to one of the balls and wonder where they have to park. So... it'll be incumbent for all of us in the media and for the city and for the Mystic organizations to let everybody know what's going on, where to park, and hopefully, carnival season will not be a major tow zone catastrophe, but we'll lot to be determined still on that. But looking long-term for the Civic Center, and of course, I was I've gotten some comments from council members saying, well, you know, this it's way too early to start discussing this. But looking long term, yeah, you have to look at a project that might be up to $202 million of public investment. And look at and it could require some indebtedness. We don't know yet exactly on the financing side of the Civic Center project, but it's just not going to be a Mardi Gras playground. There'll be all sorts of events and activities that'll be at a new revised Mobile Civic Center arena. And one of the discussions, I talked to James DeLapp, the executive director of Public Works, who's kind of overseen a lot of this project. So what's been some of the things that have been tossed out there? I mean, I think we're at a point where we can start throwing these ideas out there now. And one of them was ice hockey, that apparently one of these facility management companies that are looking at potentially the contract to operate or manage the Civic Center going forward has flirted with the idea of an ice hockey team. And we all remember that in Mobile, or perhaps mm-hmm. you don't, but you have to go back maybe a little over 20 years ago now. You had the Mobile Mystics, and really a cool uniform and emblem and a logo, and really embraced the city's culture there as far as a minor league sports team, you know, more so than I would argue than the word Bay Bears and their logo did. But Mobile Mystics really embraced that. But, you know, the current structure of the Civic Center Arena right now is not as such where you can even have hockey. I guess all the ice rink and all that is way outdated. So, you know, it would have to be something that's discussed for a renovated facility. And of course, there's a lot of things that need to be worked out there. You know, whether or not Mobile would even be in play for a minor league hockey franchise when you have one over in Pensacola right now. But that was one of the ideas floated out there. Of course, concerts are, you know, that's always an idea out there as well. And then you have some of the current tenants at the Civic Center that have utilized it over the years, like Mobile Ballet. And, you know, that would all be part of negotiations going forward. We're not talking about until 2027, I think the city's right. idea for this new and improved Civic Center to reopen. So it's still a ways away. Of course, city council members are, you know, I ask them about that. They're like, well, we're not anywhere close to having finalization of what this new Civic Center will look like. But I think that's something that people need to be asking. You know, what's this going to be looking like years down the line? And who's going to be in this venue other than, you know, 2 weeks of Mardi Gras balls?
Well, okay, here's the rub, though. I feel like those are absolutely things you said are eye catchers on a headline. Right. So I get that. It caught my eye, got me reading the story. But I go back to, I feel like it's all icing and no baking. You know, we talk about these things, it might happen, be cool, but, and this might be neat. And then people can debate this versus the other. But I've been following the story like you. I mean, you and I were both very young men when the discussion of revamping at the Civic Center happened. And I just get like, it's been, you know, it was going to be this group doing it. And then this group doing it. It was going to be outdoor eating. And then it was going to be this. And it's going to, like, I guess I need to see the mechanics that this is really going to happen. You know, and what is going to happen, and what are we built, and what's coming down? You know, you can't have both venues, the arena and the, I mean, I don't know. I think there's a mental fatigue with this because it's gone on so long.
Well, somewhat, but, you know, these projects don't happen overnight either, so we all have to
not
be
this
understanding
one.
Of that. not this one. This is a massive, this is a big one. And, you know, I think the city really wants to get it right. And to their credit, they're in the process of trying to hire Volkert as the project management company to kind of oversee everything. And, you know, that's where we're at right now. So that's kind of really in the very early stages of this overall redevelopment. I think there's a little bit of momentum here because there's been some activity outside of the actual Civic Center building. We're talking about the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers building. Ground is broken on that. The parking garage, there's going to be a parking garage built, so that's why the parking lot's going to be closed. They want to utilize that 22 acres of the Civic Center property a little bit better than it, you know, it was originally plotted back in the 1960s. So, you know, there's been a little bit of a lot of stories, whether it's TV or print, that have talked about some of the lead up. And, you know, we haven't even gotten to the actual Civic Center itself, but we all know that the arena building is outdated. That's not new news. It's costing the city a lot of money in maintenance every year. And they're looking at, how's this structure going to be positioned to benefit Mobile going forward. I know there's a lot of skepticism of potentially what could be in there, how that could be marketed and sold. But we're really kind of at the early stages right now. And again, the story I wrote was based on a conversation I had with James DeLapp. Now, there is a key set of interviews that will occur next month, and that will be with a couple of major facility management companies that they do this throughout the country. They manage sports and entertainment arenas, and the city's going to have these interviews, and then they'll decide on which one that they want to, and the city council will have to vote on it, but who will get that contract, and that company will be the one that will really kind of craft what exactly the Civic Center investment is going to bring to the city. And from talking to James DeLapp, there will be a little bit of skin in the game, too. I don't know what that looks like yet. But for these facility management companies, it won't be just the taxpayers and nobody else. But apparently one of these companies will have also an investment in this project as well. So you'll have some of that public-private partnership element. But I don't know exactly what that looks like.
Yeah, because I was wondering, is it going to be that, okay, the city owns the venue and then private management company does what it wants, basically pays rent to the city, or are they really partners in this? Is it, hey, I own the venue, but you have like a lease management agreement with me and you just pay me for the property? Or is it, hey, y'all make these decisions, we make those decisions, something like that?
All that still has to be worked out, but I think that the city doesn't want to be in a situation that they're currently in right now where, you have the building and you have a company doing their best to try and bring in a concert every so often or a wrestling event or something. There's just not enough events in that building to sustain the operating losses that they experience each year. At least that's my understanding. And, and that's not to negate, Mardi Gras is, the popular... I mean, that Civic Center was built with Mardi Gras in mind, essentially, and it's really ground zero for your biggest balls. But the city wants to do that going forward. They want to continue with that experience from 2027 and beyond. The trick here is that the city in the year 2026, I know that's way out in the future, but it'll be here before you know it, they want to close. The whole building will be closed. There'll be no Civic Center arena for Mardi Gras that year, so that particular year could be a challenge for Mobile and trying to figure out where these large organizations are going to have their balls, because you're really limited. All you really have is the convention center, which would be an alternative location, unless we go way out of the line here and do an outdoor Mardi Gras ball, which that would be interesting.
Yeah, because the weather's always so great during Mardi Gras.
It's roll the dice, yeah.
So if we're watching that timeline, like you said, the first thing that we're going to notice is there's not going to be parking this coming Mardi Gras. So, and I think Mardi Gras is, I don't have my dates in front of me. Maybe it's a early, I think it's a February Mardi Gras, but February this year, there won't be parking there. Then when do we see the Coors building will be finished next year, or what, 2025?
Yeah, that's my understanding, although I don't think that really plays a major role in everything. I think what the issue is the parking garage that's going to be under construction next to the facility. And the parking garage, according to James DeLapp, that'll be completed in time for the 2025 Mardi Gras. So by the time we get to the 2025 Mardi Gras, you'll have the parking garage and the Civic Center Arena. This will be the pretty much last year of the Civic Center Arena as we know it for Mardi Gras. And then in 2026, the Civic Center Arena, everything will be under construction. So it'll be a total construction zone. And there will be no Mardi Gras balls at the arena in 2026. And then in 2027, it reopens. And, there really hasn't been any details on what that new Mardi Gras experience might look at like. But, certainly would be different than what everybody's experience since 1966 or so. So, that's kind of the timeline right now. And again, it's still early. Volkert's got to come on board. They're the project management company. And then we have a facilities management company that will be coming on board. These stories aren't going to be going away. It's going to be kind of peeling a layer as we go, trying to see how this project evolves.
No, it will for sure. And you lay out the money involved, like you said in the beginning, 200 something million. I think there's been, what, 4 million allocated so far. And then you to try to make up the gap here, you talked in your conversation with DeLapp about a branding sponsor here for the new venue. I mean, I have suggested the Buc-ee's. You know, Buc-ee's be the branding, Buc-ee's Civic Center. But outside that, I mean, how much money can you demand for a branding sponsor? Not 100 million, can you? I mean, it seems like a long way from 4 million to 201 million in spending.
Right. That's a good question. And like I said, you know, that they don't even have a financial package together. Yeah, we aren't to that point yet. But that is one idea that the city's floating out there. A sponsorship would bring in a substantial amount. You know, that's high visibility. You would have, you know, it's not like the Mercedes-Benz or the Caesars Superdome, but it is. It would be something that would be, perhaps the dome of the Civic Center. I'm just speculating. Would have the name of the sponsored on it, and every car that drives by on I-10 or on the brand new bridge. Knock on wood, would be, you know, the sponsor of the new Civic Center as they pull away in the Amtrak that's leaving town, and we all keep our fingers crossed that this happens in our careers, Sean. So.
Yes, there's a chance that John and I may both be retired or dead by all these time all these projects are done, but we'll keep our eye on it. John, I remind folks, of course, they can go to AL.com to see your work, but on social media, where do they find you?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter. I'm just like you. It's still Twitter, as far as I'm concerned.
Dang right.
At JohnSharp99.
As always, good stuff. And by the way, our new college pick 'em stuff is rolling out, so go ahead and get signed up to try to beat me this year in college pick 'em, okay?
Yeah, I got to get with the program. I haven't even looked at it yet, but I'll get there.
All right. John Sharp, as always, man, I appreciate our conversations. We'll talk soon.
All right, Sean. Thanks.
There he goes. My man, John Sharp, and we're coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 126, FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile, Friday style. Big thank you to John Sharp from AL.com. Yeah, it's the never-ending tale of the Mobile Civic Center rebuild. All right, I want to check in with my friend Anna at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry, get an update on those Christmas rounds and some jewelry. Hey, Anna.
Yes, sir. How are you doing?
I'm good. So, yeah, talk about folks who might come walking in this afternoon, maybe with gift buying on their minds. What you got?
Yes, sir. I know a lot of people are excited about the Christmas time coming around. A lot of people are already Christmas shopping, and they're just kind of getting an idea of what's out there. We just got in our Christmas rounds. It's an ounce of silver. They come in the bar shape or around. They have Santa on them. There's one that's patriotic that's got the American flag and Santa on the front. I think that's super cute. And I love the bar that we got in with Santa, and the end of his hat is a giant star, which I think is super pretty.
Now, what about the jewelry world? You talk about great pieces, but also unique, I mean, truly unique jewelry at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry.
Yes, sir, absolutely. We just got a vintage slide bracelet. I know not a lot of people may not be aware of what that is, but it's two chain bracelet that contains a slide charm. And I think there's about 11 or 12 of them, and they're all different, very unique pieces, very ornate and delicate. And some of them are like a cameo. There's a little frog with an emerald stone, which that's my favorite, is the frog. And I love the amethyst and the pearl one, too.
All right. Well, tell folks they're going to check that out, the Christmas rounds, or all the great selection of gift items and precious metals. How do they find y'all?
They can find us at 2204 Government Street, Midtown Mobile. And I just tell people we're between the Whataburger and the train tracks at the Loop.
Makes sense to me, Anna. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, sir.
All right, Anna checking in from Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry to the text line. Tony says, get rid of Civic Center at the current location. Then you can straighten out I-10 and eliminate the bottleneck. Don said a quick question. All right, let's see. The quick question, where will the boat show be held? Don, I have no answer there. I don't know. I will find out. I know the people. I know the people that make the boat show happen. I can ask them. This texter says, Sean, I wonder if they'll come after the Comet Cowboys. I mean, they put a drag queen on the float, surround him with children, and parade them on Fat Tuesday. Oh, that was back at Mardi Gras. Or no, that was back in Bay. That's pretty funny. Said Mardi Gras. Thank you. This Mardi Gras update, 2/13/24. So it is. It's an early Mardi Gras this year, which I don't like. I mean, obviously, it's dependent on the church calendar. But I am a fan of late Mardi Gras. Like, what's the latest that can happen? Like, it can't go beyond them. It's like March, maybe the second week. Can it go the second week of March, I think? It's as late as possible. I like those most. All right, coming right back. News coming your way next. And constitutional quiz not far off either, so prepare yourself. Gird your loins or whatever you got to do.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 1:35, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile on this Friday. Glad to have you along. 343-0106 puts you through on the telephone line or the Ascension Technologies text line, 343-0106. Actually, we grab a couple texts here. And then I got to get to this, the mean streets of Mississippi police story. That's coming up in a second here. So, yeah, thank you. Texter said 2/13/24. So that, let's see. Okay, this texter said not to take away from the Civic Center, but what's up with the IRS agent that got wounded on a firing range while training at work? I heard a little bit of that story today. I don't know that story in depth. Maybe we'll look at it, have more for you on Monday's show. Fred says, do you think all the people who give a blank about the future of the Civic Center would fit in the Civic Center? Yeah, maybe. Somebody asking, will today's constitutionalist quiz be originalist or not? Oh, it is so OG. It's the OG. It's the originalist OG. It's the most OG ever. Okay. Thank you. All right. That's right. So the texter says the latest Mardi Gras day can be as March 5th. You should know that, the Moon Pie Minute. That's right. I should have gone back and studied. By the way, Moon Pie Minute, another year coming your way. It seems like it's going to be a long time, but we will wake up and it will be Mardi Gras season. All right. Dr. Mariana says, hi, Sean. We couldn't keep an arena football team, an NBA Development League team, a minor league hockey team the first time around, let alone the Bay Bears. What makes us think that the people will support minor league hockey team the second time around? I had the same thoughts there, although, you know, Dalton might argue that maybe things have changed, more people are into hockey. I don't know. I'm more interested in the how, right? How is this going to happen? How are we going to, like, it's all icing and no cake. Like, we could talk, and that's not directed towards John or others, but it's like what gets people talking is like, we might do a this and a this, and there could be a, you know, a marmalade slide with sprinkles. I don't know. How are we going to, can we afford this? You know, this, and it all started with the fact that you couldn't make, if I remember correctly, I think I do, that the changes that needed to be done, like just improvement, not like overall rethinking, but improvements to the facility as is, would trigger a certain percentage. You know, where your grandfathered in, you can make changes up to this percentage, but when you do, it would require the changes for ADA compliance for the Civic Center, which is ADA compliance, I think, is a good thing. But they said the cost of that, it ended up being like they couldn't just do, and this has been 10 years ago probably, they couldn't do just these improvements, right? It was like it was air conditioning, I think, and a couple different things they were going to do, but it would go over a threshold that would kick in ADA compliance, and that would bring in some more cost and some more cost on top of that. So if you're going to do that, why the heck not just do it, you know, do the whole thing? I think that's how we got here, I think, in that conversation. Texter suggests that Pritchard Water Board could be the new sponsor for the Civic Center. Yeah, we'll see. By the way, that I'm hopefully going to get some traction on this question of eminent domain being used, at least the discussion. It's not for sure, but they have discussed for Pritchard Water Board to use eminent domain to take the houses in Alabama Village to not have to provide water there. You know, that was one of the things that's floated out earlier this week that got me back on the train I love to ride, the eminent domain complaint train. And we'll watch what happens. I was going to say Buc-ee's. I think Buc-ee's, if I'm looking, if I'm tasked with this for the city, and I'm looking for corporate sponsors for a newly revamped Civic Center and, you know, the arena and everything, I go Buc-ee's. And another update. Yeah, the JCs are out of control at some point. They have taken over a big portion of the show. Said this year's rodeo dates were the latest it could be, the third full weekend in July. So that's also, people don't know that, not a widely known fact, that the dates for the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo and the preceding Roy Martin Young Anglers Tournament are dictated by the Christian calendar. A lot of people didn't know that because I made it up. Okay, yes. Dirt Digger says, Sean, they need to advertise on this station. And, he said, they need to advertise on this station and wait to see the turnout at Smokey and the Bandit. Yeah, so Buc-ee's, we're open to those conversations as well. All right, so let me get to this before we, because constitutional quiz is coming up in just minutes, which means you should hop on the line now if you want to participate for fantastic prizes and cash in the constitutional quiz brought to you by LNS Air. Phone number 343-0106. Remember, we do this just on the telephone, not on the Ascension Technologies text line. So you have to be on the phone line to compete in the constitutional quiz. So 343-0106. So get that ready. That's coming. That's it's foreshadowing on what's coming. But no, this story here, this is probably hear a lot of discussion about this one, I think. So the headline here from the New York Post, because I need to depend on the New York Post to tell me a story out of Mississippi for some reason, says a 10-year-old Mississippi boy arrested, jailed for peeing behind his mom's car. 10-year-old, y'all. A 10-year-old Mississippi boy was arrested and hauled off to jail for public urination, and his mom is peed off. I'll just say it that way. LaTanya Eason was at an attorney's office in Senatobia, just south of Memphis, for legal advice on August 10th, when a cop told her he caught her son Quantavius peeing behind her car. The quote here from the mom said, I was like, son, why did you do that? And he said, mom, my sister said they don't have a bathroom in there. Eason told the news outlet, I was like, you knew better. You should have come in here and asked me if they had a restroom, end quote. She said the officer told her that Quantavius could get back inside the car and he would just give a warning. That sounds like normal, right? That little boy is taking a pee, right? Can't hold it kind of thing. So they said, listen, we'll just give you a warning. But several other cops, it says in the story, several other cops then showed up, including a lieutenant who said the boy had to be hauled to jail. So this is the mom talking to WHBQ. TV, I guess, from Memphis, said, quote, no, him urinating in the parking lot was not right, but at the same time, I handled it like a parent and one officer to tell me my baby to get back in the car like I was okay and to have the other one pull up and take him to jail. I was like, no. I would be like, no, too, end quote. Quantavius, so that's the kid, the 10-year-old, said he was scared when the cops swooped in on him. Said, I started crying a little bit. They took me down there and got me out of the truck. I didn't know what was happening. I get scared and start shaking and thinking I'm going to jail. End quote. The boy was not cuffed during the ordeal, but he was held in a cell and later turned over to his mom. 10-year-old kid, 10. 10. Taking a whiz. Right? He was charged with child in need of services, which I like the fact they charged the child with child in need of services because it's actually reflective on the parent. In a lengthy statement, Senatobia Police Chief Richard Chandler cited the state's Youth Court Act, which said he said allows law enforcement to file referrals against kids as young as 7 if they are, quote, in need of supervision, end quote, or 10 years old, quote, if they commit acts that would be illegal for adult, end quote. He goes on to say, the need to transport children from the scene depends on a variety of factors and the availability of reasonable alternatives. In this situation, an officer personally witnessed a 10-year-old child committing an act that would have been illegal for an adult under these circumstances, end quote. The top cop noted that the officer actually did not see the parent at the scene. He goes on to say the mother was located in nearby business. Shortly afterwards, she was advised that her child was going to receive a youth court referral for this matter. End quote. Chandler acknowledged that under these circumstances, it was an error in judgment for us to transport the child to the police station since the mother was present at the time as a reasonable alternative. I would say yes. I would say reasonable alternative. Mom is there. If you want to give them a warning, or if you could do this child in need of services that would be hopefully struck down in court, then he goes home with mom. But no, they hauled him. They put him in the vehicle, hauled him down to jail, and then put him in a cell until mom came down to get him there. Now, I know I could probably open this text line. It's full of stories. You know, I think I've told the one in the past. My son, who on the playground there at school, when he's like a kindergartner or something like that, went behind the big pine tree and was taking a whiz. And upon being questioned about it by the teachers, he said, "Prepare yourself." He said, "Well, that's what my dad does." That's what my dad does. That was his defense. So he threw me under the bus right away. And he said, "Yeah, Dad would just, I mean, if there's a big pine tree, just go behind the tree over there, and what's the problem?" So I had to navigate that at school, but that's a whole, it's a story in the past. But this is, you have to have some judgment, right? And you're saying this is a child in need of services. You know what? This is like life used to be. You know, your parents had to go in to do something. You sat in the dang car. You didn't go everywhere, right? You stayed in the dang car. And it, I mean, I don't think it's like the mean streets of Senatobia. I look at some of the pictures here. It looks, I mean, it's not like the kid has to do the thing and goes and does the thing. And then next thing you know, he gets hauled off to jail. So there you go. We'll see what comes with that. I imagine she'll go right back to that attorney's office where she was in the first place and say, "Hey, I got another case for you while you're at it." All right, coming right back, constitutional quiz. Hop on the line, 343-0106, 343-0106. How it works is I ask you a constitutional trivia question. You answer it correctly, you win fantastic logoed FM Talk 106.5 goodies. And if you're the monthly winner, you win $100 cash from LNS Air. So good luck, 343-0106, constitutional quiz coming up next.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
150 FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Look at the text line here. I'm coming to the phones because it's constitutional quiz time, but John is a farmer, Baldwin County farmer, said, "As a farmer, the world is my urinal." John, do you... You know what I call that step? You know the step up? Whatever, I mean, and some obviously running bigger tractors, y'all have multiple step ups, but I call that the P-deck, right? You put the tractor in park and you step onto that little step up thing, and that's where you do it. But there's just, I haven't, thank goodness it's somewhere where I won't get arrested by Senatobia police. All right, it is time. It's that time of the week. That time of the week when we do this. The constitutional quiz. There it is. Brought to you by our friends at LNS Air. Here's how it works. I'm going to ask you a question, constitutional trivia question. You get it correct, you win an FM Talk 106.5 prize pack, all right? You win that. And then you're in the running for the monthly prize, and that monthly prize is $100 cash, okay? And that's all you got to do. You win today, and you win the fabulous prizes. It really couldn't even measure the value of this prize pack. But we can measure the small phrase 100 you'll pick up as the monthly winner. So good luck, 343-0106. Let's go to the phones, and first up would be Thomas in Mobile. Thomas, welcome to the constitutional quiz.
Thank you, Sean. If this is as easy as stepping behind a pine tree, I got this.
You and I both. All right. So here's how it works. We're going to ask, this is a multiple choice question, right? So I'm going to read you the question, give you the four possible answers, and you let me know which one is your answer. All right. The question is, what was our country's first constitution called? Our country's first constitution called? Was it A, the Articles of Confederation, B, the Declaration of Independence, C, the Federalist Papers, D, the Emancipation Proclamation? So once again, what was our country's first constitution called? The Articles of Confederation, the Declaration of Independence, the Federalist Papers, or the Emancipation Proclamation?
I'm going to say Articles of Confederation.
Let's check with the judges here. They're tabulating. Hold on. And you are correct, Thomas. You nailed it.
See, I told you it was easy. You're stepping behind a pine tree.
That's what we do. We step behind pine trees and we ask answer questions about our Constitution. Good work. I'm going to put you on hold. They will come to you in just seconds, they being Dalton. I will come to you and get all your info You've won that prize pack with the logoed FM Talk 106.5 goodies, and now you're in the running for the monthly grand prize of $100 from LNS Air. So good work, Thomas. What a way to go into the weekend. And somebody asking, what do I think about the storm tracks? You think, is it the storm tracks they're showing that could be in the Gulf, or is it the, let me see, oh, it's the storm track for Hillary going into Los Angeles. Yeah, that's something. That's something. It's not an everyday occurrence. You know, you have a tropical system going into, it's the land of fire and rain, right? Going into Southern California. Said Hurricane Hillary could dump over a year's worth of rain on parts of the Southwest. Win? What a win, huh? It says concern is growing. I'm joking. I understand the mudslide issues. It says concern is growing and flooding. It doesn't soak in rain out there the way it does here. It says concern is growing. Hurricane Hillary will unleash a prolific amount of flooding rainfall on the southwestern U.S. and parts of California as it makes a rare move over the region Sunday and into early next week, triggering the first ever tropical storm watch for California. Hillary could dump more than a year's worth of rain in parts of three states, California, Nevada, and Arizona. Because of the threat, parts of California face a rare high risk for excessive rainfall. The level 4 threat is the first ever to be issued for parts of Southern California. Hillary was a powerful Category 4 hurricane churning about 360 miles south of Cabo San Lucas, Mexico, as of today. Sustained winds 145 miles an hour with stronger gusts. Let's look at the benefit here, though. Yes, it'll be disaster porn, right, as it goes in, because there's so many cameras and breathless reporters in Southern California, so it'll be big time on your cable news channels with disaster porn. But, you know, it's they've been in a pretty substantial drought in Arizona and New Mexico. It's long-going drought, and even though that's a dry area, they still have what their level of rainfall. This will be a boon. So this probably only applies to like two or three people listen to me. But if I was going to put in for a draw for like a Arizona elk tag or mule deer tag or New Mexico in the lottery, I'd be looking at 2024 because they're going to get a bunch of rain, means there's going to grow a bunch of grass. It's going to feed a bunch of critters out there. That's how you look at things. Just look at them differently. So it could be a good thing. But I imagine all cameras will be trained on Hillary. And back here at home, though, remember that we also are in hurricane season here. It's been eerily quiet, knock on wood. It's a good thing. There's three in a row, four in a row tracking that could, they're heading our way generally, our way and the rest of the America's way. It doesn't mean it's coming here. It just means it's happening. You know, it's that time of year, right? I mean, we look at, we got peak of hurricane season mid next month, so. Nice thing is, we got staff meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams on board to help us navigate that. All right. There are a bunch of people that are, like me, peeved off about this 10-year-old kid in Senatobia. Listen, there's, it's, it was my man Jay said, now the kid has a permanent arrest record going back to when he was 10 in Mississippi. This is typical. Yeah, I mean, the kid... You're going to say, okay, well, if you're a grown person, you're out there doing it, you'd be exposed. Yes, but he's a 10-year-old kid. If the police officers would have come up and said, son, you can't do that, and, you know, we're going to give you a warning and this is, we're serious about it, that's fine. That's fine. Just say, we don't do that. But you don't put the kid in a squad car. A 10-year-old boy. Haul him down. Yeah. Okay, well, John, yes, you have more steps on your tractor than I do for your deck, your number one deck there. All right. Calvin says that kid will never trust the cops now. Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't know if he never will, but there's a chance of it. I mean, that's going to be, imagine at 10 years old, how scary that would be. Dan says, I can't say Dan's the potty mouth there, but blank those men. That's what he says. CB Carl, I can't believe that a hurricane can be allowed to be called Hillary in Southern California. Yeah, that you think they'd be welcoming it, right? But you know it's going to be, you know it's going to be breathless. It's going to be breathless reporting from there, and it's serious. I mean, I feel for those folks too. We have regular folks that they're going to get damage to their homes and flooding and all those, you know, all those things. There'll be more attention brought to that than there are to what now still looking for 1,000 people missing in Maui from those fires. And you heard the news update there, and let me get the actual Let me get the story up here. So the now where was now they where did it go? There was a the story is that the person in charge of the EAS there is Maui's emergency management chief resigns. Here we go. Get ready. Maui's emergency management chief resigned, citing health reasons, a day after he defended siren silence during the deadly wildfires. Remember we talked about this at the beginning of the week, and we're trying to figure out why the warnings didn't go out, and they said, well, maybe it was the cell towers were down, or maybe the power was out. No. So the head of Maui's emergency management agency has resigned, citing health reasons, according to Maui County, a day after he defended the silence of the island's siren system during the deadliest U.S. wildfire in more than 100 years. No details were released about Maui Emergency Management Agency Administrator Herman Ndaya's health. His resignation was effective immediately, and his role will be filled as quickly as possible, according to Maui County Mayor Richard Bisson. It says, here it goes. Now scrutiny is mounting over the official wildfire preparations and response, including the role of the local electricity provider and siren system. As the deadly fire spread, no one tried to activate Maui's 80-alarm all-hazard outdoor siren system. That's from a spokesperson for the Hawaii Emergency Management Agency. No one tried to activate Maui's 80-alarm all-hazard outdoor warning system. And Daya was asked on Wednesday whether he regretted not sounding the alarms, which are part of the larger statewide network. He said, I do not. Saying he worried the alarms would have sent many residents inland and into the fire. And he's resigning because of health reasons. I bet. All right, Paul Feinbaum Show on the way next. I will talk to y'all on Monday for another edition of this show, Midday Mobile. Y'all have a great one.